Well, welcome everybody. This meeting is being recorded. Got it. I would sort of in general, I found this an interesting collection of articles, and as usual, it did seem as though artificial intelligence got added into the conversation as opposed to becoming the topic of the conversation, which is a nice thing that it's sort of receding into how do we work with it and how do we think about it and things like that. So I'd like to explore that theme as we go along. But also let's just if we could just recollect some of the articles that you read and get some reactions to them or learning and takeaways. And I'll take them from the top. So we had the first one, rid your organization of obstacles that infuriate everyone. My comment, maybe a little off to the side, is I guess a lot of leaders never got the GE workout, GE bureaucracy busting, continuous improvement, Lean Sigma memos. Because it seemed like a reiteration of the last 15 years of simplification and obstacle removing. Did anybody discover anything genuinely new from that article? And if so, how do we apply that?
Well, what I loved, are you asking this like for now or for later? For now?
Go ahead.
What I appreciated in that article was the language. Like there was a lot of new, to me, new language introduced that I just really loved, like waste hunters and jargon monoxide, and there was all kinds of interesting language in there.
I don't know if I heard anything new, but I did like the repeat because it's I agree with the premise of the article, which is our default is to add as opposed to take away. And it's sometimes just worth a reminder to, keep the subtraction equation in there. So that for me, it was worth it for that. Although I would agree that there's nothing necessarily new there.
I certainly did like the reference to the fact that it is so much easier to add than it is to delete. Any other thoughts from that topic, that article?
I think the bottom line, though, is even though it maybe it's nothing new, no, people still don't do it. I mean, people are not doing it.
What do you think gets in the way? And in our practice of organization design and development.
Well, I think he talked about in the article, which I loved, was like the sometimes your performance agreement is in the way because you're only rewarded for things for adding and not for subtracting. I think that's one. That he talked about the human nature of the ego wanting to add. So I think a lot of those are things for us to look at because even our practice, right? It is about adding most of the time. You're going to create a new design.
And the new design is additive.
It doesn't have to be,
No, nothing's a riff.
but often it is, or it doesn't seem like a thing. You didn't make a thing.
Is there anything that I'm trying to think in my practice and asking about yours, is there anything designed into the practice to address the issue?
Process improvement may be more than process design.
Yeah, I
I
think
see.
in organization design as well, when you get to the more numbers side of things like spans and layers of control, the idea is that you are, in terms of spans of control, you want to have a more standard thing. And in layers, you know, usually the idea is to have less layers, not always. So there's some things that are built in to push us that way.
Does anybody use the bureaucracy busting or the GE workout methods in your practice?
I don't use those exact methods, Jim, but I mean, my whole practice is about, you know, descaling and whatever you want to call it, pulling out a lot of the bureaucracy to make things flow. I mean, that's kind of what flow is about. So yes, but no.
The principles, but not the practices.
Yes, thank you. Much more eloquently stated.
Okay, good. What about the second article, 8 Essential Leadership Tips for 2024? It sort of drifted into very quickly into AI. And so sort of my big question that popped out was, how does this article help your clients navigate AI to deliver business value? Anybody explicitly engaging in that? Is that still a future thing?
So on the AI stuff, I think that we were talking about the one which is Kellogg Insight, right? The three steps.
The essential tips.
It's the MIT.
R. McLaughlin, oh, MIT Sloan.
MIT Sloan. Oh. I didn't think it was about AI at all. I thought it was all about an excuse to republish articles, but maybe that was me being really cynical.
That's what I thought it was. Where do you see AI in here?
Yeah, I was looking for AI. That's why I got confused, I think.
Well, it's that intricate. Let's see, what was my take out of that? Was that the intricate challenges related to artificial intelligence, crafting strategies for AI implementation remains pivotal. Yet equally significant is the art of steering teams, et cetera. And then the article sort of drifted off the preview.
My two cents on that is they said you better put AI on your article or no one's going to read it.
Yeah, that was that was my critical takeaway as well.
Because the rest of the article has nothing to do with any of this.
Yeah. So bring us back to what you think the value essence of the article was.
I didn't think there was much value at all, actually. I didn't really feel a coherent, like, 8 tips. As I say, they are referencing 8 articles they've already published this year or last year, 2023. I wasn't sure that they made a coherent whole.
Lack of cohesion. That was my takeaway too. Like, there's some good tips in there.
Mm-hmm.
But there was a lack of cohesion. Like, I don't know what this, it just 8 disparate things about leadership, little sound bites.
Mm-hmm. And any significant, I think one of the thoughts that jumped out at me was, is there anything that is unique to 2024 as stated?
So I think the stuff around equity and hybrid teams is more relevant than it's ever been.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting though. Strive for equity on hybrid teams is like a 2023 thing. I don't know if that's a 2024 thing. I think the world has largely given up on equity for hybrid teams from what we've seen from the data. And then the better judgment muscles in a hyper transparent world is not just the same old, although I don't know that I agree with it. It does seem like a 2024 thing, at least. I mean, don't we say don't be judgy? And then it's like, be very judgy.
Another theme that sort of pops across articles is this idea of the client's appetite and willingness are diverting in a lot of these things. They have an appetite for things like hybrid teams and networks of self-organizing teams, et cetera. But when it comes right into the conversation of designing organizations to realize that, you get a lot of back pressure. Anybody else getting the same kind of reactions from, you know, I read the McKinsey article on this, and I really want to implement this, but whoa, wait a minute, it really means that?
Yeah, I'm not sure what you're getting at with that, Jim. Like, really means what? Which one are we looking at?
Well, it really means that I have to delegate decision making to two levels below me. Oh, you mean they're going to be independent of us? Oh, they can have their own culture. Oh, you know, we're not going to have an internal department. We're going to have a couple of experts that coach teams. You know, all these sort of 2022, 2023 recommendations that spark the interest because McKinsey says they'll increase your productivity by 8%. And then when we actually get in and start talking about what the implications are, there's get some pushback. No? Okay.
Coming off of mute really quickly, I've had a chance to, experience that in designing that. I don't want to say L1, L2, but more to L2, L3 because of the CEO being L1 when we're talking about spans and layers. And as I started to research, some of the things that I've noticed is that it seemed to be a pushback on from those executives that I want to say work their way up through networking versus having that knowledge and understanding of the business. You know, a lot of time I hear something like, hey, I want to redesign this because I read this here for it. And sometimes what you read doesn't necessarily translate to your strategy, but it's like, I want to do it because I hear someone else is doing it and that's the best way to go. So I've kind of seen that when it comes to that pushback, but where I've had those leaders that have that, you know, I want the best working for me. I don't care if someone's smarter than I am. Those guys seem to say, hey, get it done. Trust the people under you. Make sure I'm in the loop and let my workers be free and just making sure that we, you know, create that, remove those silos. So that's some of the things that I've seen over the past 2 to 3 years.
Okay. So this brings us back to your article focused directly on AI. What are the early steps that you're helping organizations implement? There's a suggestion here of steps. What are you, anybody actually working with a client who is, or, you know, internal or external client that is implementing or at least wants to get started with AI?
Sure. And I would say that actually this article and the other one relate pretty closely to what I see as well. So I'm not sure it's necessarily for AI, but lots of companies are really doubling down, you know, in 2023, going into 2024 on data governance and, you know, sorting out their data ecosystems, just being technologically and people and processes more thoughtful about data, because they realize if they want to have AI be something different and not just focused on large language models and generative, then they've got to train it on their own data to be a differentiator. So I do think that's true. That first one, know your data, feed the beast. And I'm not sure that the step three, create your AI strategy, be thoughtful and comprehensive. I mean, yeah, you've got to go and create a strategy. I'm not sure that being thoughtful and comprehensive is telling me much. But I definitely see that people know they've got to get their data sorted out. They know they've got to get educated as to what it's going to do. And then they need to be strategic about it rather than just jumping in. Like they're jumping in and taking a step back at the same time, saying, okay, where's this going to go?
Andrew, you're seeing people training their AI models on their own data?
Yeah.
Okay. I do have one client doing that, but I don't.
There's the kind of general AI, which is, there's lots of types. I'm not talking about generative AI necessarily here. So for instance, at the moment, we're talking to a company about using AI for forecasting. So taking mm-hmm. forecasting skills away from people with spreadsheets and using a model to do it because it's a lot more accurate. And they use only their own data. They use their own data that they get from customers and their own inputs, and they use third-party data like market forecasts to feed the model.
Yeah. That's similar to my experience is the discovery that the humans who have been using the automated systems that collect this data have been overriding the systems. They have been bending the systems to do what they want. So for example, creating the same customer twice in the system so that they can get the reports that they want out at the salesperson level. So they tried three or four times to IT to say, I want this split up by customer groups. And IT comes back 2 years later and they haven't done it. So they simply create another customer and now they're getting skewed data out of their systems when they try to aggregate data. Gigantic hotel chain that found out that people were overriding currency exchange rates at the hotel level around the world. So revenue numbers never added up. And finance always compensated it with allocations. Are these kinds of issues as onerous as my experience has been recently?
I would say yes. There's I think a lot of companies don't even know what data governance is. They have to go on a path of discovery, even sophisticated companies, to know what data governance is and to understand, because before you kind of even start to govern it, although you could argue it's governed, you need a data model. And that's not something IT can do. You need to go to the business and ask the business, how do you want to, model this data so it serves you as a business? And too often it's like this handoff over the fence and it doesn't work. And it's a very old view of how you should make data governance work.
Any other sentences?
I sent this particular article to my son, who works at Boston Scientific. And he's currently leading a team of six individuals, three data scientists and three biomedical engineers. And they're looking to use generative AI in terms of doing a number of things for the business, including creating the next generation of endoscopes. And so they're actually trying a number of different approaches. One is they've got a team, it's focused on a particular technology, and they're trying to figure out how can I support this or enhance this process. What they ended up doing and what they are doing now is one of the things my son Michael pointed out is they really do have data challenges. And so what they're having to do is build a community within Boston Scientific so they can start to feed the beast, you might say, in terms of how do we feed the beast? What do we feed the beast? And what is the menu all about? And so that's one of the major challenges that they're faced with, just building a community within internal to their company to understand the data and how it needs to be used. The other thing they're doing is they're building relationships with the MIT, and I think it might be another consulting group, just to get a broader picture, a broader understanding about how does all this thing work. So they're coming at it in terms of a very specific, and they're trying to build relationships across different technology groups and build a community of interest around that. So they're building a community, essentially, to figure out how to coordinate their efforts to tackle these issues. They're reaching out to external resources to get maybe a better understanding what's happening to the technology as a whole in the industry, to try to come to terms with how do you really use generative AI to solve specific business problems within, in this case, Boston Scientific.
Yeah. I think actually one thing this the Boston Scientific makes me think, actually, that one of the issues that companies face, Boston Scientific included, is that not all the data they need that should be theirs is theirs. So Boston Scientific use a lot of CROs. CROs. And so therefore, a lot of the CROs keep the data on their behalf. And then it's difficult to, that data that you want on your experiments and your trials is actually with a third party, and getting it back into your ecosystem is just a trial in itself. So that's another interesting point about you. As we think about designing organizations, we often talk about, you know, designing outside of our organizations as well to make the whole chain more efficient.
There was, I think, a key point for me was this idea of your data, of all the data that you have, what data creates your distinctiveness?
Mm-hmm.
What creates your competitive advantage? And that seems to be something in organization design that we address sort of tangentially. But this idea of getting very clear about what assets do we have, including data assets today, what assets do we have that drive competitive advantage, and are we designing the organizations to preserve and extend those over time? Or are we designing the organization for a new steady state? I'm challenged with that question. Any help? No help.
Well, I mean, I think it's a good question. What I'm trying to figure out in my mind is the connection with, are we designing for what you're saying, like adaptability or stability? And how does that tie to the AI piece of this? How does this tie to the data piece?
Yeah, that. How do you connect those two dots? That's the challenge. Right. If we're designing an organization, when in my experience in designing an organization that never existed before, you're designing for a series of future states. And when you're designing a system to solve an efficiency or an effectiveness problem, I think I'm designing for a new steady state.
Well, I mean, the hope, I guess, and those of you who are working with it currently can speak to this, the hope of AI, which was a hope of a lot of technologies in the past, this is not different, is that it gives us more transparency and insight into how we should be adapting for the future than we have by going and gathering it and trying to get our own insights. But are we using, the question is, like, can we and are we using AI for that purpose? Which, from what I've seen so far, no.
Yeah, Jardine, I would say the opposite almost. I think one of the things about AI is it often feels like a black box. So we know I've forgotten what the word I'm looking for is, but we know that the results are good and valid because we test them empirically. As in, empirically, the results are good, but we're not actually sure about how we got there because there's a real lack of transparency about how the cookie's made, especially with, you know, large language models where it's generative AI and it's, you know, made by a third party. We have no idea what's happening inside.
Right.
If you create something, you know, in your own organization, at least you know, if you're doing it properly, you'd have governance around the code and you'd have an ethics committee that was, you know, ensuring that it was an ethical code and so forth. But yeah, I feel like the opposite is true in that it leads to less transparency rather than more.
So I agree with you on the transparency that's happening inside the box. I that of course, yes. I was more referring to maybe transparency is not the right word, but a faster and more frequent insights for current data.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Whereas if it's like, I'm waiting for some analysis team analyst person to get data from disparate places and make the connections.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I may never have that transparency to connections between disparate parts of the organization.
But I run out of time. Yeah. No, that could be true, that you get more insights more often.
Right.
Yeah.
I was working with a merchandising department and they use the term, give us reports of data that's directionally correct. We don't want perfect. Because yeah. We're not going to pay any attention to your data anyway, other than the things that justify our thinking.
I love that. Yeah.
And you say, oh, okay, so let's not over-design that, but gee, how do you design a half-baked system?
I mean, the downside is it's confirmation bias every time, but the upside is something might get on your radar that wouldn't have gotten on your radar.
Yeah. And I think an interesting point from Malini is this idea of designing for stability for a period of time. If we are designing to solve a problem, it might be a good idea to think that we're going to solve that problem for a stable organization that is only going to be stable for 1 year, 2 years, 6 months, whatever it might be, and then be adapted again. So again, we don't go for perfect, maybe. We go for good enough to get along for another year, until the next disruption comes or until the next innovation comes or while we innovate. There's different thinking about it. Mm-hmm. What about the early days generative AI strategy? And the one that popped into my head was that we're building the use of generative AI into our organization design practice as an active participant. I think I might have mentioned this in a previous session here, is that we give AI at least one chair in the room.
Mm.
And AI gets to chime in on each topic at least once. But we certainly allow everybody to grab their laptops and pose the question to various generative AI systems to see what comes back. And it was brought to our attention that a result of that was that we were developing strategic thinking skills on it among the members of the teams, because we were asking them to try to validate what the generative AI system said. And then come back and say, you know, representing AI. Anybody else bringing AI into a generative AI into their consulting practice or their coaching practice?
We've also tried kind of as a proof of concept rather than with clients, two things. One is uploading images of organizations and asking for analysis from AI. So like, you know, tell me about this organization, you know, what are the spans and layers and how could you improve it? Or, you know, writing a few paragraphs about what you want and asking the machine to come out with some, you know, three different models. So that's been interesting. The former was more successful than the latter. But then also thinking about using AI to assess jobs and understand how suitable they are for AI.
To assess jobs and decide how and assess how suitable they are for AI.
Yeah.
But isn't that like the cat, the fox watching the hen house there? AI is going to be like, it's great, I'm great. Bring me in.
Not exactly. It's more about using large language models to say, what does this job consist of? How suitable is that? Yeah.
Yeah.
I like
how suitable is it for the same individual to do these four conflicting things at the same time?
I think it's interesting, though, because thinking of a job, you know, if you have the job description and you have lots of different activities, you know, some are much more suitable to be automated or augmented with AI. So there is some definite, you know, we are going to have to reshape jobs and parse some of the jobs out to two machines or other kinds of, you know, the old four Bs of buy, borrow, beg, or bot. It's going to be interesting to see how that goes.
Well, I love what you're saying. I hadn't really thought of it this way, so thank you. Forecasting is like the bane of everyone's existence in a lot of organizations, right? Like, it's always wrong. And we've always talked about using historical data models, like Monte Carlo simulations and things like that. But AI might be better.
Yeah, and that's exactly right. That's, I think, the client we talked to, the proof of concept we built, and we're just talking about extending it to the whole of production. We use just a off-the-shelf AWS AI-driven forecasting tool. Fed the data and configured it. I say just. I mean, it was pretty complex. I didn't do it. Let's be clear. We had a data scientist do it. But you know, in essence, it was using ready-made stuff.
I have to go look into that. That's great.
And I think the last thing I got was this same question came up in a different forum. And one of the responses was that you don't develop an AI strategy, you develop a business strategy, and you then explore how to implement that strategy using with AI. And the argument on the other side was that somebody needs to understand AI well enough to actually have an AI strategy at the infrastructure layer. So would one see AI as a subset of IT, or would they see it as a subset of operations, a subset of strategy? Where in an organization would the source of IT of AI strategy come from in your thinking and in your experience?
Experience is IT or the business. Occasionally chief data officers. But I haven't seen it, you know, there's not a trend as far as I can see.
Melanie's saying business strategy. But I feel like without answering the question, I'm going to answer the question. You know, what you said about like an AI strategy, this is the thing that scares me, is like that makes it a flavor of the day. We need an AI strategy, not to have it be part of our business strategy, but a whole separate thing. And then when we start to get a chief AI strategy, chief AI officer, then I quit, because every time something new comes out, it like has to become its own thing. It's part of your business.
It is.
So I can recollect back when I was asked to leave the engineering department at Bose and start up an IT group, to start up the IT department with a CIO. My job was to develop a individual productivity strategy for Bose. How do we increase the productivity of individuals without impinging on their creativity? Because Dr. Bose was a big creativity person. And then that shifted once we got that sort of squared up, moved on to the next strategy that had to get added to the list. And eventually it became an enterprise architecture role in the organization. And then luckily I got CIO job and didn't have to do that anymore. But I think you're right. It becomes a flavor of the day, or it become it to the point where it can become a distraction to just, you know, getting things done.
Yeah.
Any other observations on this sort of this, I'm gonna refer to it as this emergence of AI into the conversations?
I don't know about AI there, Jim, but the Bose example makes me think of a different thing around data itself. So I imagine early on, data was all about the product, right? How it performed, what its frequency response was, blah, 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 right? How good we were making it. Whereas I imagine today, Bose's focus on data is about the customer, is about the person, the user. So how are they using the headphones? How do we tie them into our ecosystem? How do we make this product more of a product that's virtual as well as physical? And I imagine the nature of data has changed radically for Bose.
Well, I'm not maybe involved not directly any longer, but it yeah. never was. Bose is a product, was always a product outcome company. It was based on engineers who came up with ideas for things that never existed before or never existed in the way that they were going to be delivered. And then they were made available to the public. It was not a, let's go out and look at what the people want. I'll give you an image that still puts goosebumps on my arms is sitting at Symphony Hall in Boston with Dr. Bose and the then CEO, the then president of the company, and a woman standing on the stage playing a flute, and Dr. Bose saying, "We need to make a loudspeaker that is no bigger than that woman's mouth and the mouthpiece of that flute. Listen to what she can produce." And that was the birth of the wave radio, and then the music system, and then the wave radio, and then a whole series of products coming out of it. That's the way the company worked. One of the engineers didn't like the way the suspension on his Volvo worked. So maglev automobile and vehicle suspension systems came out of Bose. So it's a interesting thing about companies is where they come from. You know, mm-hmm. it's literally the idea was to create an engineer's playground. And by the way, if you didn't produce money, you weren't there very long. Okay, and that is this idea of a generative AI strategy. And again, from this just previous meeting, recently previous meeting, is new things in new ways, or old things in new ways, and new things that have never existed before. When does that kick in? Does that kick in general, 2 years from now, 5 years from now? Any thoughts on getting past generative AI to getting into the more exotic variations and applications of AI? All right, then I won't ask about quantum computing. Let's move on to the next article. What about enterprise architect? I was one.
Oh, okay. Then give us your insights, because I read this. I'll just tell you, I'm a tech. I was for a very long time a technologist and ran a technology company. When I read that article, I was like, is he talking technology, architecture, or enterprise? Because that's how I always use the term. Yeah. Or is he talking organizational architecture? So what did you think? It sounded like a technologist acting like he wasn't a technologist.
My business card said Bose Corporation Enterprise IT Architect.
Oh, said IT. Okay.
Because again, we're engineers, so we use a lot of extra words. But I became a business architect And that's what moved me from my technology role to chief information officer. And it wasn't chief information technology officer either. It was chief information officer.
Mm-hmm.
So from my perspective, the business architect is the new role. And the business architect is the role that creates the architecture for how systems will come together to produce the desired outcomes of the organization.
Okay, wait, I just want to pause you because this is where the article got confusing. When you say systems, are you talking about technology systems or, you know, human systems?
We're talking about organizational systems.
Okay. I wasn't sure.
Technology, culture, and process.
Organizational systems. I got you.
So organizational and six organizational systems is seven organizational systems is my model.
Okay.
So where I got with it when I went to work with the RBL group to head up that practice was, how do we reinvent organization design so that it focuses on designing organizational systems and not just organizational structures? So okay. How does it design a work system? And when you tell the IT people they're part of a work system, they get kind of bent out of shape. They want their own system. No. You're part of the work system. You enable people to get things done, just like a hammer or a jack saw.
Often I would call it operating model instead of organizational design. Because
what's that?
Often I would call it operating model instead of organizational design.
Yeah.
I think it's more all-encompassing. That's an interesting point, which is to say that the architect is not, you know, as I think of an architect, the word to me says structure, if you know what I mean. I suppose if you're I don't know, it just says structure to me more than it says dynamic systems and processes and stuff. But I think it should be those things, as you say.
Yeah. So our approach was, you've got six systems and an alignment plus an alignment system. You got six operational systems: work, structure, information, which is not IT, talent and leadership, incentives, and continuous improvement and renewal. And you design those six systems with an alignment system. And the alignment system is the one that is predominantly missing in organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Is how do you align incentives with outcomes? With desired outcomes? How do you align incentives with culture?
And I love that, Jim. So how does your experience and what you're saying relate like to this article? Like this article resonant with your experience, or was it conflicting?
It resonates with my desire that enterprise architect enterprises, not just IT systems. But if you ask your generative AI, somebody ask generative AI, what is the role of an enterprise architect? I'll bet it comes back and says IT systems. Somebody do it? Somebody got a laptop open?
I'll get in there. Hang on. Gotta give me a second though.
Interesting. Is it Hoshin deployment? Going back to that old, the whole idea of Lean Six Sigma. Hoshin deployment, where you have, you know, your overall, you know, plan a page A3,
yeah,
and cascade it down. There are KPIs, and when you're doing design, often it's the guiding principles, the design principles, which are the alignment mechanism. But they're kind of a bit set in stone, so you kind of have to have those and then measures. But is that then that just becomes very organizational measures? So I don't know. I don't have a good answer. If you got one, I'm all ears.
If you wind the clock back 25 years, there was a role in companies called the chief operating officer. And the chief operating officer's job was to align all of those systems. That went away for some reason.
What, we don't have a chief operating officer anymore?
Well, we don't have the role of the chief operating officer being responsible for aligning all the other systems. Like HR doesn't report to this chief operating officer and finance to the chief operating officer.
Yeah, I just started working with a company that their goal is, they're based around the humanocracy or the teal organization type concept. And their goal is they're trying to make software that will help align these things, help align purpose and strategy and incentives. So I checked Bard and ChatGPT, and they both did say technological backbone. They did mention alignment with business, but they said it's basically, yeah, you're in charge of making sure all the IT kind of aligns with whatever everything else is doing.
Now ask it, who is accountable for aligning finance with technology and finance with production? And you can get into a dialogue, and it actually does a pretty good job of saying nobody does that. It usually says, I'm just a large language model and I don't have access to all of that information at this time, or something to that effect.
Well, so here's what it says for Enterprise Architect: to align an organization's business strategy and objectives with its IT strategy and infrastructure.
There you go. Who aligns HR to the HR systems to the strategy? Who aligns finance systems to the strategy? Right. So this article, I think, is pushing the point that the enterprise architecture should encompass all of those bits in the context of the ecosystem within which it operates.
Well, in talking about the who, is the who people or team? I would have thought the executive team would be responsible for integrating all the different functions.
Mm.
I mean, that's who makes the decision. It typically just goes to the top level to decide what kind of organizational model or philosophy they're. That's the question. I don't know.
Yeah. So you would get leaders like, say, Zappos and Steve Jobs at Apple, who would feel in two very different ways, would feel that that was their job. And they would wander from department to department continuously, making sure that everything was aligned
mm-hmm.
to deliver those outcomes. Mm-hmm. One, Steve Jobs, through command and control and fear and intimidation, and I can't remember Say's first name, but Say through charisma and cajoling and inspiration. But there's a system that can be designed as well that aligns things. And that's where the adaptability and the agility might come from. So I like this article from that point of view, that it's one of the few that actually says that an enterprise architecture is crucial in designing the processes, systems, resources for alignment with business objectives. Goes through the whole kit. And sometimes that falls upon the organization design consultant. Or the organization design consultant runs into that not being true. But we're closing in here. What were the one or two takeaways, and put them in the chat if you would as well, for those of you who are not are on mute. What few takeaways from this conversation and the articles do you think you might want to explore more and incorporate into your work and thinking? As you think about that, Mary has introduced this idea of ethics and into it. And that's interesting. I'm also active with the European Organization Design Forum. And we just had a conversation where about AI and ethics in a breakout group. And some countries are actually considering outlawing AI until it is stable and mature. Not sure what that means. But it's really become a social conversation point as much as a technological and operational conversation point.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear thoughts around that, because I come at it from a couple of different perspectives, is understanding how that, you know, that data is being, you know, I'm getting something out of AI, but I'm also inputting into it. And how is that data that I'm being, that I am putting into the program actually being used? I don't have any line of sight into how any of that works. But then there's also like known issues with it having, you know, providing false information and things like that. So, you know, the ethics of utilizing potentially flawed data. And then, of course, for me, though, I like none of those are reasons not to do it. I think there's a ton of opportunity there. But just having some understanding of what you're getting, putting in and what you're getting out of it, I think some demystifying, at least, or maybe some upskilling for me on that would be needed before I can really feel comfortable applying it in all the ways I would like to, and all the ways that I'm inspired to by the way it's working so far.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts?
I just wanted to mention there's an AI podcast this week. I'll put the link in there that might be interesting to you with Eric Schmidt.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
It was interesting because he talks about some of the things you're talking about.
Mm-hmm. So just to related to what Mary was just saying, I belong to a group who transforms digital books so that they can be read, translated from text to voice. So they eliminate some jargon, they remove various markings and things like that that are in digital ebooks. And so I have a program that accesses various sites that sell books and collects information on them. It totally befuddles Amazon.com recommendations and IMDb's recommendations of movies that I might want to watch, as well as MSN and can't remember the other one, the other sites that pick what articles I might want to read. So, for example, I've just done all of John Steinbeck's books. The family donated them. And so now I'm getting recommendations to watch movies by every motion picture that anybody has portrayed a John Steinbeck character in on Netflix. So I can see how fast a connection, a request for information from Amazon.com ends up over on Netflix. It's within hours.
Wow. Yeah.
So to Mary's point, what are they doing with my data?
Oh, Lena's asking what that tool is. Is it about for the book to text? The book?
Excuse me?
There's a question in the chat about what is this tool? Is this tool the book to voice tool they're asking?
No, my contribution to the international group is simply I've developed software that reads digital books and recognizes things that don't translate well to text,
mm-hmm.
and then adjusts it. So like a whole series of exclamation points. Think about the book reader going exclamation point, exclamation point, exclamation point. So I changed translate that to series of multiple exclamation points. So it's a call it an infrastructure tool for the group that makes these books available to various other sources. I was just reading through the text here. I think in general, there's a good number who love the jargon from the article that Jardina pointed out. Is they have a lot of good terms for things. What was that one back here?
The article?
Yeah, the
it was the subtraction thing. I don't remember the title.
Yeah, the 8 essential leadership tools.
Rid your organization of obstacles that infuriate everyone.
That one.
That's it. Number one. I think that was the top of the hit parade.
Also, one observation that I had was we talk about adaptability and constantly adjusting to the changes. And stability is a transient nature, right? Like, that's not our aim, but we want to be constantly adapting. Being this an approach, seeing what other, generally countries and organizations are wanting, more stability. I want more architecture around it. I want more predictability. Is working against the very motto that they're wanting to exist in, right? I want to adapt more, but really, I really don't want to adapt more.
Yes. Yes, that was my thought exactly from your comment, Malini. Thank you for saying it.
Yeah. That's the willingness versus appetite versus willingness paradox.
Well, they want to use a new tool in old ways, you know? It's like, yeah, we have this tool that can help us be adaptable. So let's have it use it so that we can be more stable and rigid.
Mm-hmm.
All right. I know we're at the end of our time here. I see Tanya.
Any other observations from anybody? Okay. Hey, back to you, Tanya.
Well, thank you very much, Jim, for helping to lead the conversation today. Appreciate it. And hopefully we'll get things squared away in the next round about making sure everybody gets the newsletter, because there was a handful that didn't realize there was the pre-reads as part of the session. So hopefully we'll be able to get that resolved going forward. And we'll have a few more actively engaged, which always makes it a little more intriguing. So thank you all very much. We appreciate you being here and be on the lookout for some information about both the conference and some additional virtual offerings that we're scheduling some dates for and getting on the calendar, and I'll be sharing information about soon.
All right. And thank you, Tanya, for setting this up.
Always a pleasure.
Bye, all.